Session number 9234.
Mr. McFarker, reel 5.
And I was taken out on this. So they just simply said, well, you will be volunteers, so we all go. And there was one individual whom I disliked, a young, boastful individual whom I disliked very much, and I thought, well, all I'm concerned is to beat you, and that would be that. But in actual fact, in beating him, I won the race as well. So thereafter, they kept any new race, region, regimental, they said, McFarker, you won a race, you can go out again. Anyway, that was the kind of thing. And Louis McKenzie and Roderick McKenzie kept training me. And Roderick said to me one day, he said, you know, he said, you'll be a cert, he said, for commission. I said, nonsense. He said, oh yes, he said. He apparently knew, and he himself was going up for commission, but he was uncertain if he would get it. And I said, oh, I said, I hadn't even bothered about this. Yes, he said. So a few days later, the corporal or sergeant in charge, we were paraded as usual, and then he shouted to me, he was well away from the squad. He said, McFarger, 30 paces forward, march! So I promptly come forward. And he said, he's well away from the squad by this time. How long have you been a soldier, McFarger? And I looked at him with mock astonishment and said, 6 weeks, Corporal. 6 weeks, he said. You fucking liar, he said. You can censor that.
No, that's all right.
Return to the ranks. And I go back, and I see Roderick later. I said, Roderick, I said, I know that I'll not be commissioned, I'll get my commission. He said, you can't. He said, how do you say that? And I told him then, he said, what does that mean? I said, it means that MI5 have finally caught up with me 6 or 8 weeks later and found that I was in the International Brigade and they don't want people like me who were the first fighters in this particular war. But they don't recognize us as such. And I thought, I was so furious at this, that I thought to myself, well, I'll fight this lot. Prior to that, I couldn't have cared less. I said, I'll fight the lot of them. And I did, and I eventually succeeded in being commissioned.
Was it just a guess on your part that the MI5 had been on your trail, or did you have some evidence for it?
No, I didn't have any evidence. I had no more evidence than these very facts. That corporal was letting me know what had happened. He must have been told, watch that man. And this is the way he was telling me.
Did you find that the fact that you'd been in the International Brigade was of benefit to you when you went into the British Army?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, I got on extremely well with the experience that I had had. And when I went to Sandhurst, they'd already knew in advance that I'd been, and they said, oh, you know, as long as you behave yourself here, he said, we take no umbrage at this. And in actual fact, the climate was changing a bit by that time. And I must say, I thoroughly enjoyed my period in Sandhurst with these great black-visaged guard sergeants chasing you all over the place. The trouble was, of course, they couldn't chase me as fast as I could chase them. And they loved it.
How did you chase them?
Well, I could keep up with them. I could do more than they could do, physically speaking. And that really, they felt they could understand and accept me.
When you got your training in the British Army, did it teach you things which you then reflected and said, I only wish I'd known this in the International Brigade?
No, not really. I'll tell you, of course, I'd been in the territorial army beforehand, so that I had quite a considerable background of knowledge and experience, apart from my reading anyway. And I think that, on reflection, I think it's probably true to say that had one had this kind of experience that one got in the British Army, one would have done things differently.
What type of things?
Well, I think that I would have gone for in Spain. I would have recruited the kind of commander type and taken them through the lines at night and opened up lines, as they could well have done. And done this kind of thing in a big way could have helped to change things a bit. Mark, I don't think it would change it completely, because I remember the attacks that were made on us. By this time, the Germans had were very, very well equipped with artillery, tanks, and bombs. And I remember our last days in Spain, when they were attacking us, we'd got up to the hill, was it Condesa or Hill 666? Oh, I can't remember now. It is somewhere. It's in that book, I think, of mine. And this was the last 24 hours of. And we knew we were pulling out the next day. And the fascist Germans had mounted a ferocious artillery attack on us. And we were quartering, almost inch by inch, they were quartering the ground. And I was hugging a bit of a hole in the ground along with a friend, Polish, or was he from Latvia, doctor? And there where the thudding was all around us, and there's nothing you could do. You just could lie and pray or hope that nothing would hit you. And he said to me, you know, he said, this is my idea of hell, he said. This is terrible. You know, the even the thunderous roar and the thud, 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 you could feel it in your own body as you lay there. And that went on for four or five hours until they lifted the barrage.
Did you experience anything as bad as that in the Second World War?
Yes, I did. I experienced it. I was on the assault onto the Sue Bevelin beaches in Holland. And I was landing with the on these crocodiles that were going ashore, and the enemy was mortaring us very badly, and they hit several of the craft. Fortunately, didn't hit ours, but and we got ashore, and I pulled our jeep up onto the wall. And sat there for a time. That was about the only. That was probably about the worst.
So that was a similar intensity of bombardment to the Ebro, was it?
Yes, it was quite as intensive. And then we came back. That was we were pulled out at that point.
Now, I asked you earlier. You were telling me earlier about what you said to that British colonel about the calibre of the Spanish army.
Mm-hmm.
That was presumably the Republican army, was it?
Oh, yes.
What did you think about the calibre of the fascist forces against which you were fierce, as a soldierly force?
Well, it's difficult to make an estimate of that when you don't see very much of them. But I would have said that their morale was only good when they had all the ammunition, the guns and the truck, the transport and the tanks with them. I don't think their morale was all that good otherwise.
What gave you that impression about their morale?
Because they had, there was no sweeping attacks, physical attacks, by their soldiers. It was all done through planes and guns and tanks, which of course is one way of dealing with. And the Spaniards, of course, didn't have that kind, pardon me, of equipment to deal with. They had to rely mostly on their own valor and faith in their struggle.
At this time on the Ebro, do you remember the discussion starting about whether the International Brigade should be pulled out of Spain?
Well, by that time the International Brigade was in a fairly exhausted state because they had all been fighting for a fair long time, and they'd been in most of the battles. But the Spaniards didn't want them to pull out, but what was the name? The Prime Minister Negrin, was it Negrin?
I think so, yeah.
Yes. This was their saying, all right, we'll pull out our volunteers if you pull out your German and Italian soldiers. Well, of course, all they did was to pull out their sick and wounded. We pulled out everybody. Every volunteer was pulled out. And I remember being in Valencia, I think it was, with a friend of Spanish friend, an officer friend of mine, and we went into this bar, and I hadn't seen him for some days, and we were sitting there, and he said to me, and his lips curled with contempt, he said, "You're a great British Prime Minister, Mr. Chamberlain," he said, "has gone back out to Munich." Oh, I said, "My God, not really." "Yes, he has," he said. I said, "Do you know what that means?" He said, "Yes, I do." I said, "They're going to give in. And that's the end of the Spanish Republic, too." "I know," he said. And it was the case. Munich signed the death knell of the Spanish Republic at that time. And many, many brave men were dying because of that. And when you think on the way that the British sold out these vast ammunition, Czech ammunition factories, and about 5,000 Czech planes, and thousands of tanks. They were all used in the sweep through France in 1940. It's a ghastly thing. Ghastly, unbelievably so.
Can you tell me how you came to leave the International Brigade in Spain?
We came out and went about. We came back. I came back with Chrome and one or two others. And they came back by France, by train, and came across the Channel. I remember the first time I saw food and well-stocked shops and lights and so forth for the first time, and I thought to myself, unbelievable to see this, and was promptly ill because I ate some too rich food. And
did it come as a surprise to you when you heard that you were having to leave Spain?
No. We knew that we were going to do so, you see. And the very last, day we were there, and when after this barrage, awful barrage finished, and we started walking back, and I said, oh, thank goodness. I said, we're at least alive. And I get down, and then I get a note saying, to go back up, there's people lying out and wounded in no man's land. Pull them out. That wasn't a very nice sort of thing to have to do with knowing that at midnight we were all finished. And it was very difficult. I got a group together, stretcher bearers together, and told them, right, I said, well, get up. But it was touch and go, I must admit. But we made it. We got those that were alive out of this machine gun post. And in fact, a number of other wounded, too, took them all back. Pitch black night. And then the moon came up, bright as day. And I said to the sergeant, you must tell me where these people are. And they were I couldn't blame them, they were so reluctant. And I raged at that. I said, for God's sake, I said, I don't want you to come up. I said, you just crawl up the hill and point out where the boys are. That's all I want you to do. I'll go on up and do it myself. And I put all my chaps on the slope. And one finally said, all right, I'll show you where they are. So we crawled up there, and he said, that's it. He said, you can see. I said, yes, I see it. I said, all right. I said, you stay here, I'll go. And I get the hold of the... I get up there and I pull out one chap and I say, I'll take him back and give him to this fellow, and you push them down the slope. So I got them out. But it was a tricky business. Very. You don't want any more, do you?
One or two general questions I'd like to ask you. Did you come across the Pum in Spain?
Who?
Pum.
I think they were up on that front, northern front too. Well, I didn't know much about them, but they were in that rebellion in 1937, May 1937 in Barcelona. No, I didn't meet them.
What about anarchists? Did you come across them in person?
Oh yes, I did. Durruti was the main leader, and he was gradually realizing that you couldn't win this war unless you organized and disciplined people and put them into regiments and divisions and so forth. You couldn't do it any other way. And my own view, and the view of some people, a number of people, is that poor Durruti had gradually come round to this point of view, and this fellow anarchist shot him rather than have him betray their beliefs.
What impression did you get of the anarchists you came across?
Oh, I am prejudiced because I should. That occasion when they came flooding off the front at Zaragoza, and Crowe and I and one or two others were trying with our revolvers to frighten them back in, and they were just walking out. No, I couldn't. But that is I may be deeply prejudiced by that, about that. As I'm deeply prejudiced about the Pum, too.
Now, did you have any VIPs come and visit you, either British or Spanish or other?
I didn't have any. I was really on the front door most of the time I was in Spain.
No political leaders?
Harry Pollitt came out, Attlee came out, but I didn't see them.
What about individual members of the International Brigade, whom you met, who you had particular respect for? Do any outstanding personalities come to mind?
George Green was one of them. And Wild, what's his name, Wild?
Sam Wild.
Sam Wild. And Kerrigan. And Ramelson was out too. There were a number of Germans, splendid Germans too. Hans Beimer Battalion. And they were really magnificent. Some of these commanders were magnificent, the way they held their men together. But I can't remember all their names.
No, I'm sure you've read a number of the books that have been written about Spain in subsequent years. Is there anything that you want to say in comment on what's been written in the books? Do you think they give a fair account?
Oh, yes, they do give a fair account. I think there was an American wrote a book giving practically the first 6 months of the war, which he said determined the whole course of history and of that war, which I thought was an excellent... I think I've got it here, in fact. I'll have to look for it to let you see it later. But I would have said most of the books were factual books, and to me they told a reasonable story of things. Except that Thomas, I don't think Thomas was fair to the Republicans in their in his comments upon them.
In what way?
I think he got prejudiced on the basis of his anti-communism, because to me I couldn't. Differentiate between all I was concerned with was people that would fight and stand, and whether they were communists or anything else, I didn't mind. And there were some magnificent Spanish officers too amongst them all. And the communists set such standards of self-sacrifice and discipline. They infected and inspired the units of the army with their same attitude to the struggle that was taking place in Spain. They were not prejudiced against alternative political units at all, and did their utmost to obtain cooperation from all groups, liberal, anarchist, and conservative.